Life is like a bag of golf clubs. Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose and today we take a quick look at Hoffman's sign. I've mentioned before on the podcast that I like playing golf. To some, a good walk spoiled, but to me, golf is a good walk enhanced, a way to maintain flexibility, to get out into the fresh air and play a game that, thanks to the handicap system, can be competitive no matter your age or ability. I also like analogies. These are great ways to explain information or situations that can unlock someone's understanding by comparing it to something that is common to them. A good analogy can be the first step in helping somebody understand a concept and then leads to further learning and understanding once that first hurdle has been overcome. So a golf analogy seems fitting for today's eponymous sign. I was recently looking at my golf clubs. You're allowed 14 clubs in your bag, and the constituents of people's golf bags are often fairly similar, but there is variety on how some people choose to stack their bag. For longer tee shots, most people have the driver, and of course for putting, we all need a putter. But there is variation in the number of lofted wedges that people keep, depending on how they like to hit shorter shots around the green. And there's variation on the longer clubs, with some preferring woods, some long iron clubs, and some hybrids between the two. These variations can depend on how you hit the ball, your swing speed, your age, the types of courses you play, the types of shots you like to hit. In Scotland, the home of golf, playing on windswept and exposed seaside links courses with firm, sandy fairways and lots of hidden bunkers, players will play low shots to keep out of the wind and to run along the ground, utilising the contours. But on a classic American-style inland course, with trees lining the fairways and soft, receptive grass and greens that have water and bunkers surrounding them tightly, low shots just do not work, and you have to flight the ball higher to get it to stop on the green. Some players will chip a ball with a wedge anywhere that they're not on the green, but others prefer to use the putter from just off the green, if they're able. And each of these players will often achieve their goals playing their own individual way. Golf is flexible in that regard, and at the end of the day, it is about the score you card at the end of the hole, and not how you went about completing the hole. You might drive the ball 350 yards down the fairway, then flick a wedge onto the green and take two putts to complete your par. Or you might hit a 250 yard drive, then another long iron into a greenside bunker, splash out to 10 feet, and then hole that putt for a par. They both count as pars. There's a famous quote by the great South African golfer Bobby Locke that goes, "You drive for show, but you putt for dough." This highlights that a 2-inch putt counts the same as a 350-yard drive, and what matters is how many shots it takes to get that ball in the hole. While I bought a new driver and a putter a few years ago, most of my clubs are quite old, like 30 years old, but the irons still work for me, and I do not think that the improvements in technology will give me a significant improvement. Like an old sock, my clubs just feel right to me. I did need to update my driver, as the new technology in this area significantly dwarfed my old Wilson Killer Whale. This was the driver that John Daly won the US PGA in 1991, and while good then, it was a bit like comparing an iPhone 15 to a Nokia 3210. Which leaves me one club that I've not mentioned, my Callaway Big Bertha 1-iron. I've used this club as a security club off the tee since I bought it 25 years ago. It's also the club I hit my most memorable ever golf shot from the middle of the 14th fairway on the old course at St Andrews, over the hell bunker and onto the green. I've never hit a sweeter ball or one that was exactly as envisaged, all enveloped in the majesty of that historic setting that I was lucky enough to find myself. So it is with some sadness that I came to the conclusion recently that I've not actually hit this club for some time now. My game has changed and perhaps I should swap it out for something else. But every now and then, it has been just the club I need, and so it has remained in my bag. And it will do, at least for now. And it was as I was considering this major change to my golf bag that I realised that in practising medicine, we all pack our golf bags differently. Our goal is the same, to make our patients better. And some things are universal and required. Just like we need golf balls, tees and a putter, we all need to be able to perform basic examinations and procedures. But within a lot of what we do, there is variation between us all. Some people will prefer a particular way to stitch, or might set their slit lamp on slightly different settings. We might reduce a dislocated shoulder in different ways, or have a different way to perform a regional block. We might all structure our history taking differently, or write our notes in a slightly different way. We might use different mnemonics or aid memoirs, or choose different decision support tools. We all have our preferred analgesics, or eczema regime, and we all might have different ways of reviewing all of the features of an x-ray. In deciding on a diagnosis, we might have a club in our bag that we do not use very often, but every now and then it might be used for a specific situation and to help galvanise your diagnosis in one direction or another. It might not be needed very often, as history and other examinations might be enough, but nevertheless, just like my dormant one iron, it's there if you need it. And this leads me to Hoffman's sign. This was first described by German neurologist Johann Hoffmann in 1911, and it aids in diagnosing cervical myelopathy and upper motor neuron disorders. To perform Hoffmann's test, also called Hoffmann's reflex, you flick the middle fingernail in a downwards direction, and if the thumb on the same hand reflexively flexes and adducts, then the test is considered positive. This might be due to cervical myelopathy from compression caused by either trauma or a pathological condition. It might also indicate an upper motor neuron lesion. But this test is found to be positive in 3% of the normal population, so false positives occur. And a study in 2015 by Nemani et al. Found that in a retrospective case series, the Hoffmann was positive in patients with cord signal change on MRI in only 67%. So it's clear that this is not a test to diagnose a condition on its own, and further imaging and workup will always be required. But given that it requires no tools and takes seconds to complete in an urgent care clinic room, it is worth doing in anyone whose history suggests a cervical myelopathy. It is a test that is worth having in our bag, to use judiciously and in the knowledge that it might not give us the desired results. It might end up in a duck hook out of bounds and a quadruple bogey, but it may actually help you bring together the history and examination such that you can make a focused referral to the correct specialist. As with many eponymous signs, we cannot rely 100% on any particular one, but using them in the right situations and interpreting the results along with everything else available to you helps the urgent care clinician as we try to sieve our patients, such as to find any significant pathology. I'll link in the show notes to the paper I mentioned and also the Stat Pearls page. And I'll also link to a couple of YouTube clips that demonstrate the test being conducted very well. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or suggestions, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. And we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.